Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Five massive patches of plastic are floating in oceans around the world. That list includes a concentration of plastic debris the size of the state of Texas floating between California and Hawaii. And every minute of every day, another garbage truck of plastic joins the fray. That's every minute of every day. A 2018 report by the Earth Day Network predicts that in about 30 years, plastic by weight will exceed that of fish in the ocean. In fact, for many aquatic creatures now, plastic is a major component of their diets. Will McCollum, head of oceans at Greenpeace UK, has written a new book about how to kick the plastic habit. The book is titled How to Give Up Plastic, a guide to changing the world one plastic bottle at a time. Welcome to the show, Will McCollum.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How bad is the plastic problem? Did I do a pretty good job of describing it, or
you did
is
a
it much
good
worse?
Job of scaring everyone.
Okay,
yeah. It's pretty.
But
bad.
It's true. It's not
it
idle scare.
It's true. It's unfortunately true, and we're seeing it getting worse in front of our eyes at the moment. You know, the plastic problem. It's a relatively recent as environmental issues go, and yet somehow it's accelerated so fast. So you're right. A rubbish truck of plastic going into the oceans every single minute of every single day. One company, Coca-Cola, alone produced more than 120 billion plastic bottles. And globally, less than 10% of this plastic we're using is recycled. So, you know, that can be a depressing set of statistics, but I hope it's actually a very motivating, very galvanizing set of statistics because, you know, we have to do something about this and we have to do it quite fast.
And a lot of people are talking about it. I had your book out over last week when I was entertaining some people, and everybody wanted to talk about what they're doing about it. But I also wanted to know, on an individual basis, how much does it really matter?
It's a great question. I wrote the book in a way because I've never worked on an environmental issue, and I've worked on the environment for more than 15 years and never worked on an issue where so many people ask the question, you know, what can I do? Because people feel this responsibility. What we see on the beaches, what we see, you know, on YouTube videos being pulled out of a whale's stomach or a turtle's mouth, they're the objects that we use. They're the objects which we see in our own cupboards and take home from the store ourselves. And that builds this connection with the problem that I think people feel very uncomfortable with. And they're growing in number and calling to say, you know, we don't want to be a part of it anymore.
What about the big corporations like Coca-Cola and PepsiCo and that kind of a thing? What role do they play in stemming this tide?
I'd say they play an enormous role, and they are not living up to it. They are not meeting the moment. You know, if we look at, like I said, one company, Coca-Cola, producing more than 120 billion plastic bottles, what they need to be doing is setting reduction targets. You know, they need to incentivize a rapid move away from single use towards reusables, or in many cases, just cutting out plastic altogether. There are so many instances where plastic packaging has emerged as a result of marketing or as a result of habit rather than actually being a necessary bit of packaging. And we need to be cutting all of that out whilst innovating away from this single use, because using something once, whether it's plastic or paper or anything, using any material once, using it for a couple of minutes and then throwing it away is a terrible use of resources. It's really uneconomical and doesn't make sense. And, you know, we have the tools to fix this. We know how to create reusable materials. We know how to change delivery systems. We know how to do all of this stuff.
We're talking about plastic and how to stop using it. My guest is Will McCollum. He's head of oceans at Greenpeace UK. He's written a new book about the topic. It's titled How to Give Up Plastic, A Guide to Changing the World One Plastic Bottle at a Time. If you have your own story about giving up plastic, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. There's the issue of microplastic. You start with the discovery of microplastic in the Antarctic, right? You start the book with that that story in the foreword. Why is it significant?
Well, microplastics make up about a third of plastic in the ocean by weight. So they're a big part of the plastic problem. And microplastics, that means any piece of plastic less than 5 millimeters. A lot of them so small, you need a microscope to see them. And they get in through all different means. Some of them are originally part of a bigger piece of plastic, like a bag that break down into small plastics. But a lot of them enter into the ocean that way. So a huge amount are coming in off of our clothes. If you wear clothes that are nylon or polyester, when you wash them, they shed what are called microfibers, these tiny, tiny fragments of plastic. And they're so small that they go down the drainage system into the water and eventually end up in the ocean. And I get asked the question, you know, why does it matter if you can't see them? Are they really causing that much of a problem? But when plastic's in the ocean, it's kind of like a magnet. Bad stuff sticks to it. And that bad stuff could be mercury or cadmium, or it could be, you know, man-made chemicals like polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, which were used as flame retardants in the 60s. And that means that when a small fish eats that bit of plastic, they're not just eating the plastic, they're eating all of those toxins with it. And that small fish gets eaten by a bigger fish, gets eaten by an even bigger fish, eventually could even end up on your dinner plate. So microfibers and microplastics, they're playing a huge part of the plastic problem. But, you know, there are tools to stop it. Simple things like, you know, do you really need to buy that piece of clothing? Could you just fix your old clothing? Or maybe you use a lower spin cycle, a lower temperature, a full load. Those are all ways to stop so many microfibers going down the drain. You know, and government needs to do it a bit as well and legislate against particularly microfiber-intense pieces of clothing being used, and for better washing machine filters so that they're more caught before they go into the water system.
And the idea of discovering it when you were on a trip to the Antarctic, what's the significance of that? That's thousands of miles from any place.
Yeah, it's so remote. I mean, on a personal level, it was just so sobering. You know, I've seen a lot of plastic on the ocean and on beaches. I spend a lot of my life out at sea or working with fishermen around the coast. And I was lucky enough to go down to the Antarctic and observe just what a wilderness really is. And the Antarctic is really the world's last great wilderness. There's no permanent human habitation there. And we were in the Weddell Sea, which is the coldest sea on the planet. It's where Shackleton lost his boat. It's so cold, the fish have antifreeze in their blood, a natural antifreeze. And there was no one else there. I mean, I remember standing with the captain on the bridge looking at the radar, and you could just see that there was one other ship in 2 million square kilometers. And then we came across this bright pink piece of plastic. And not only that, we found microfibers in freshly fallen snow down there. We even came across these huge plastic fishing buoys as we rounded past an iceberg. You know, we have damaged that environment. And to see it so far south in such a beautiful, pristine landscape was just a reminder that, you know, we have unfortunately gone past the point of no return. We've changed this planet, and we need to work fast to make sure we don't change it so much that we lose these amazing places that we've grown up to love.
I had to resist the urge to use that cut from the film The Graduate, you know, where the guy wants to talk to the guy. Say, I have one word for you, plastic, because that was back, you know, in the 60s, when this all kind of started. We were still using glass bottles for milk and for pop or whatever you want. Glass basically was king, and then this plastic emerged. So now we have the plastic users. We have the Coca-Colas and the PepsiCos out there that use the plastic at the rate at which you described. But we also have the makers of it, right? I mean, are there plastic companies out there still?
There are plastic companies, and actually a lot of them are getting a huge amount of investment from oil companies, because oil companies are worried about not being able to burn all of the oil that they've got access to.
And they use it to make plastic.
They use it to make plastic, exactly. So they are investing in new plastic production facilities. You know, they're already responsible for so many other environmental problems, and they are heading straight on into making another problem even worse by creating more plastic production facilities. Plastic production is set to quadruple by 2050 at the current rate, and we cannot allow that to happen. You know, we have to say enough is enough. We have to reduce our plastic footprint globally, individually, as corporations. We have to reduce the amount we're producing, because there's no waste system in the world that can deal with the hundreds of millions of tons of the stuff we're producing every single year.
Is it that there's so much plastic, or is it that plastic in and of itself is not easily reusable or doesn't break down? Well, it doesn't break down in a natural way. It's not natural.
Well, personally, I think it's that there's too much of it. Mm-hmm. You know, plastic in some instances, it's cheap, it's hygienic, it's you know, you can create it easily. The fact it's made of fossil fuels is a big no-no, but it's such an amazing material. We should be far more precious with how we use it, because you're right, it doesn't break down. One bottle can stay in the ocean for hundreds of years, and that means it's incredibly hard to clean up all of the plastic there, because it's all still out there in the ocean. Every bit of plastic that we put into the ocean, it's still there one way or another. Maybe it's broken down into smaller pieces, but it's still out there. So we should use it very sparingly. And the vast majority of plastic we just shouldn't be using. We shouldn't be using a material that's so resource intensive to create and then create so much environmental problem when you get rid of it at the end. It's a kind of double hit of environmental issues.
Obviously, it's rampantly used in the healthcare industry, and for good reason, for all the reasons you just described.
Yeah, and I would say the healthcare industry is bottom of my list for sorting out. I think there are so many places we need to go first. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to look at grocery store shelves. We have to look at, you know, all those meaningless, useless bits of plastic we've grown so used to, but actually we just don't need them. I mean, you know, things like cleansing wipes, they're all made of synthetic materials. Mm-hmm. So they'll break down into microplastics. Since when did we stop using cloth flannels? You know, things like cotton earbuds with a plastic stick, or coffee stirrers that are plastic cups, you know, mm-hmm. all of these kinds of things. They're so new. I know, I'm not that old, and I can remember only having reusables at home. We didn't have single disposable plastics.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, I mean, there's a lot of things, like they just give you a straw, you know, even when you get a cocktail, they just throw a straw in there, like as if you need it. I mean, it's that how it's so entrenched in our culture now.
Yeah. And so one of the potential solutions that government can be looking at is, you know, if they created a charge on the production of virgin plastic, it would give this material much more of the, you know, the weight that we should be dealing with. It would make this material far more valuable, and it would mean that people aren't just willing to throw it away as they do at the moment. They wouldn't just be handing it out just to anyone. It would become a much more prized material. And equally, at an individual level, I mean, one of my favorite stories, or many of my favorite stories have come since writing this book, are of people just going and talking to the local restaurant, the local cafe, the local bar, and saying, mm-hmm. do you mind not using straws anymore? And generally, the business owner says yes, because so much of this stuff is just habit. Mm-hmm. They've just started doing it and didn't really think about the consequence of doing it.
You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Will McCallum. He's the author of a new book. It's titled How to Give Up Plastic, A Guide to Changing the World One Plastic Bottle at a Time. Will comes from this very authentically. He is head of oceans at Greenpeace UK, which is his work there has inspired the book as well. If you have an idea about how to get, you know, how to kick the plastic habit, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're going to hear, obviously, lots of Will's ideas coming up. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about plastic today. It's pretty much everywhere, and not in a good way. A 2018 report by the Earth Day Network predicts that in about 30 years, plastic by weight will exceed that of fish in the oceans. Will McCallum, he's head of oceans at Greenpeace UK, has written a new book about how to kick the plastic habit. It's called How to Give Up Plastic, A Guide to Changing the World, One Plastic Bottle at a Time. If you have an idea, rest in your comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Will, can we recycle our way out of this? Or are you saying that we really just have to stop producing so much and using so much?
Unfortunately, I don't think we can recycle our way out of it. There is a role for recycling. It is there. But, you know, think about the scale of this problem. This is easily more than 350 million tons being produced every single year. It's just too much to recycle. And it's not a great use of the resource, you know. It's energy intensive to pull the oil out of the ground, to create it into plastic. Then we use it once, and then you have to recycle it and go through the whole process again. You know, we have to look beyond recycling and look at reduction as the first solution, and then recycling can kind of mop up what's left.
You know, there's an issue, an economic piece here. You know, it's a first world problem, because we can worry about it, because we can do something about it. But what about developing countries and their issue? They seem to be hurt hardest by it, but also need it the most. That is plastic.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, if there's one myth I want to bust is that this is the idea that this is a problem somewhere else. There are other countries that are the only ones responsible for producing plastic and producing plastic pollution. Because when you go there, and you know, we've been there, we've done an investigation into plastic in Southeast Asia. We went to Malaysia. And we went there because China, at the start of last year, introduced a ban on receiving any plastic from the West, because they said, you know, we're fed up. You're sending us too much stuff. It's too low quality. It's too hard to recycle. So we're not going to take it anymore. And we got interested in where all of the plastic from the US, from the UK, from Germany, from Spain, where it was all going. And what we found was it was going to other countries in Southeast Asia, and it was just stockpiling. We went to the middle of jungle in Malaysia and found plastic envelopes with UK addresses on them. We found German chocolate bar wrappers. You know, we found Spanish bags of chips. We found all these plastic things from the West there in Malaysia. And all it takes is for one of those sites to be next to a river, and then you're starting to cause that plastic pollution over there. And equally, you know, the companies producing this stuff, where are they based? Where are Unilever, Nestle, Danone, PepsiCo, Coca-Cola? They're all based over here. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all based over here, but creating a problem over there. So as individuals with a lot of capital, you know, comparatively in the West, we have that responsibility to send the message over here that we want to see these companies take the problem seriously and massively reduce the amount of plastic they're producing.
Mike in Pataskala, you are on the air with Will McCallum. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Ann. Will. Will mentioned a little bit ago that they discovered microfibers in snow in Antarctica. And I'm thinking that's probably confusing people, wondering how the microfibers can get in snow. And that actually is, there's a mechanism that is causing a redistribution of many chemicals around the world. We used to think that PCBs, DDT, mercury, et cetera, that was discharged into a lake or the ocean would settle, accumulate in the sediments at the bottom, and be removed over time from the environment. And we discovered that that's not true. There's a lot of these contaminants that remain in the water column, and then they escape from the surface of the water directly by evaporation or in tiny droplets during storms, and they're distributed around the world. So things like microfibers, PCBs, DDT, mercury, and also a lot of chemicals are released from plastics. You know, plastic may not just be the resin used to make the object. There's also plasticizers, UV inhibitors, all kinds of other chemicals that are also being released along with the microfibers. So these chemicals migrate around the world in storms, then precipitate out in the Antarctic, in the Arctic, all over.
Sounds familiar, Will McCallum?
Yeah, this is the problem. We put it out there and it stays, and the impact on natural processes is sometimes unexpected and not what we predicted at all. You know, we didn't realize in the 60s when DDT and PCBs, these, you know, persistent or chemical compounds, were being put out into the ocean, that they were going to still be there half a century later. And had we known that, I hope that we would have made a different decision. And yeah, like Mike said, I'm now finding them in Antarctica. So that, to me, is this great motivation to sort this problem out now. Let's not be here in 50 years' time knowing that the plastic that we're putting into the ocean now is still going to be there. Let's stop producing so much of it.
And stop using it on a personal level.
Yeah.
Mike, thank you so much for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how to kick the plastic habit. My guest is Will McCallum. He's the author of a new book titled How to Give Up Plastic, A Guide to Changing the World, One Plastic Bottle at a Time. It's not just plastic bottle. I'm sitting here in my studio and I've got a plastic, you know, monitors, keyboard, pens, my phone. It just goes on and on and on. It's just everywhere.
Yeah, it's so ubiquitous, plastic. But I'm really focused on single use, because I think that's the problem that we can...
Like the straws, the cups.
The straws, the cups, the bags, the food packaging, the washing up liquid bottles, the shampoo bottles, the wet wipes, the diapers, the toothpicks, you know, you name it, we've done it in plastic, and that's where I think there's a huge opportunity to reduce and reduce fast.
You have five steps for getting rid of plastic, and the first one is to go on a plastic-free shopping spree. What do you mean by that, and what's the point?
I just mean that there are some helpful items that will really help you on your plastic journey. And individual actions do matter, because, like I said at the start of this program, that thing you're holding in your hand, there's no guarantee it's not going to end up in the ocean. So I think cutting it out is something that we should all be doing. And it's empowering. You know, it's good to feel that you're part of the solution. This is a shared problem. We have a shared responsibility to solve it. And the fact that our individual actions feel small shouldn't be an obstacle to doing them. If anything, they should be all the more reason to do them, because they're that easy. So a reusable water bottle, a reusable coffee cup, a reusable bag, saying no to straws, maybe getting a metal one if you really want to have a straw, taking some reusable cutlery so that you're not so dependent on plastic forks. You know, these are all the kinds of things that, you know, just a few items could really cut your use. In the UK alone, we use 35 million plastic bottles every single day. Now, there's around 75 million people living in the UK. So just by cutting out your plastic water bottle use, which is very easy to do in most of the Western world because we have safe drinking water, you're no longer being part of that problem.
One of the issues, I mean, there is a societal piece to all of this. I do carry my own water bottle, but I wish there were more places to fill it up safely.
Yeah, and that's another. So my book is filled with tips on how you can start to have those conversations with businesses or places that you go regularly. You know, these are places that want your custom. They want to hear what your experience is like. They want to provide a good customer service. So say, I would love it if you could refill my bottle. It will probably increase footfall in your shop or in your restaurant if you say to people, "We'll refill your water bottles." And that's a conversation all of us are totally equipped to have, and it should be an easy, friendly conversation, and the knock-on impact could be very big. Likewise, local government, they need to put more drinks fountains back. You know, we used to have a lot more of them in the UK at least, and we need to see them come back, have a revival.
With a bottle filler on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Grant in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Grant.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I was throwing a bottle of Gatorade away, an empty bottle, after finishing that, and I noticed what caught my eye was a California Redemption marker on there that, you know, is an incentive to recycle. They tax the product to begin with, and then, you know, they pay you a nickel, or I don't know what it is now, might be more, to return it, you know, to the recycling center, or its weight based on a nickel of a container. So I lived there for 20 years and recycled constantly. They have machines in front of the grocery stores where folks can just recycle it, you know, return it immediately. Kind of like the old pop bottle refill. You know, you brought your old glass pop bottles back in. They gave you credit towards a new 8-pack of Pepsi, you know, in the bottles. And But that caught my eye, and I try to I use frozen concentrate juice normally, and I have a pitcher I've had for probably 10, 15 years, plastic pitcher that I reuse and make mm-hmm. my juice in that I drink throughout the day.
Instead of buying it in a bottle, a plastic bottle at the grocery store.
But I noticed the Gatorade bottles were almost as, they're such high quality and well-made that they look like you could reuse them for years. And then they're just one, they're a single use with mm-hmm. no recyclable, you know, in Ohio, no
yeah, we don't
no
have
incentive,
any incentives.
Really.
Yeah, that's right. Grant, thanks a lot for your call. That sound familiar, Will?
Yeah, these systems of deposit return, you know, they work best when they're, when they're large scale. So mm-hmm. if all the drinks companies sign up to them and if local government pushes it, at the moment, we're starting to see them make a revival in a few places. In somewhere like Germany, these deposit returns, so that means, you know, you pay that little bit extra for the bottle and then you get the money back when you return it. In Germany, we've seen recycling go up to more than 95% of bottles. So they can really work, but you know, there will always be a certain amount that leaks out and ends up in the environment anyway, right. Which is why looking at them alongside reduction is what we need.
And as far as your five steps go for getting rid of plastic, one of them is a plastic-free purge. And when I think about that, for instance, I was looking at my cottage and I have this big frying kind of thing. It's plastic and it's like a griddle. And I thought, I don't know, I never use this. I don't want it. But then I was thinking, well, I don't want to throw it out because it'll just go into a landfill and I'll just keep it and maybe I'll use it.
Yeah, I think, you know, keeping the stuff that you have is also, it's part of that. It's what we need to do. We need to look back to our parents, our grandparents who, you know, kept things, took good care of them, fixed mm-hmm. them, repaired them. And I think the same applies to plastic stuff that you've already got. You know, don't look at throwing it away just because it's made of plastic.
But a lot of it isn't repairable. They've made it so it's not repairable.
Yeah. In that case, I think you should send it back to them and let them deal with it.
Yeah, you do mention that. It could cost a little bit of money, but yeah, I mean, it's sending a message. And you talk about preaching, and I thought that as far as what are the five steps for getting rid of plastic, I thought that was kind of interesting. You really put it on the individual.
Yeah, I wrote this book for individuals who want to know what they can do. And I was getting the question so much online, in email from friends, colleagues, neighbors. And I was like, well, what are the single biggest actions an individual can do? And for me, one of the biggest actions is using your voice. You know, as much as giving up individual items of plastic is using your voice. We're not going to solve this problem unless we have a lot more people asking for it to be solved. And that means, you know, telling your neighbors, telling your friends, telling your colleagues, but also using your social media accounts and using your capital as a regular customer or as a voter to say, you know, I want to see less plastic in my life. I don't want to go to a store and come home with as much plastic as I've come home with food. This has got to stop. And we have greater access to decision makers than we've ever had in the whole of human history. Any ordinary person can get in contact with their representatives or with CEOs, and we should be using that responsibly. And there's so many great stories of people doing it. In the UK, we had a story where there was a cauliflower steak, which is a ridiculous piece of food anyway, you know, a cauliflower sliced into thin steaks being right. sold individually for twice the price of cauliflower. And it was wrapped in three layers of plastic, and somebody had the good sense. They were so angry with it. They took a picture of it and posted it online, tagged the company, and within 24 hours, they'd stopped selling that product. You know, that is an example for me of where an individual has the opportunity to become an activist, to become a campaigner in their own right. And I'm really excited by that. And I think plastics is providing a great issue for people to get active on and to feel empowered to ask for the change they want.
How much do you think that the lack of activism up to recent history has to do with the fact that people in the Western world don't see where the plastic's piling up that much?
I think a lot of it has. And I think it's a reason why a lot of the companies and governments can point the finger elsewhere and say the problem's over there, we're doing our bit over here, because we don't see it. It's not in front of us as much as it is in other parts of the world. But that said, I do think we have all now had that experience. I've yet to meet someone who hasn't had the experience of going somewhere mm-hmm. beautiful of being somewhere in nature or being in their, even in their favorite park, and looking around and feeling like it's been spoilt by litter. You know, we that emotional connection to our landscape, we've all had it, and we've all seen it being ruined by human activities. And that is what's galvanizing, motivating people to act. And, you know, as I said at the start, that could be depressing, that to realize that we've changed our world in this way, or it could be seen as a very motivating, very exciting time to get involved.
And you don't think it's too late?
I never think it's too late. I couldn't do this job if I thought it was too late. It's too late. What I will say is it's too late to go back to the way things were. I think that's a very sad truth that we could all do with owning up to and facing, that our planet has changed, and it's changed really fast, and it's changed in ways that we don't even know the full extent of yet. But we do know that we have to do something about it now to stop it changing even more. And there is so much out there that's worth protecting. There's so much out there that we love. There's so much about our lives that we're so privileged to have that, you know, we should be fighting for it. And we should be saying this extends beyond just plastic. It extends to, you know, the whole climate is changing. The way we consume food is changing habitats and ecosystems across the world. And you know, we have to find a way to come together and demand that this overconsumption comes to an end.
My guest is Will McCollum. He is the author of a new book. It's titled How to Give Up Plastic, A Guide to Changing the World, One Plastic Bottle at a Time. He, Will, is the head of oceans at Greenpeace UK, and we're talking to him by Skype. So if you have a question or comment for Will, or have your own idea about how to reduce consumption of plastics, particularly one-time plastics, single-use plastics, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. We're talking about plastic today and how to stop using it or use it as little as possible. It's pretty much everywhere. A 2018 report by the Earth Day Network predicts that in about 30 years, plastic by weight will exceed that of fish in the oceans. Will McCollum, head of oceans at Greenpeace UK, has written a new book about how to kick the plastic habit. He joins us by Skype. His book is titled How to Give Up Plastic, A Guide to Changing the World, One Plastic Bottle at a Time. Will, thanks again for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me.
You know, it starts at birth, right? Nowadays, diapers, plastic.
Yeah, people. So a lot of people don't realize that diaper companies go into maternity wards, and they very much sell their products there and then to brand new mothers. And we've gotten so used to disposable diapers, partly as a result of this technique of selling that product. But, you know, I don't always like to talk about diapers, partly because, you know, they're a bit gross, but
yeah,
also because I have lots of friends who are parents and a lot of friends with young children. And they tell me, I've got no money, I've got no time, I've had no sleep, I cannot be doing anything other than looking after my child. And yet I feel so guilty about using this much plastic. And I think that's a really common experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're a walking bundle of single-use plastic. And to them, I just say, well, you know, don't make it all or nothing. Don't make it, you know, if I can't give this up 100%, I'm not going to do it at all. Just break it down. That never got anyone anywhere. It's like New Year's resolutions. If you write a list of 20, you're never going to keep any of them. If you write a list of 2, you might keep one of them. And I think the same applies here. So why don't you use reusable diapers at home and disposable ones when you're out? Or maybe reusable cloth flannel at home, but those disposable wipes when you're out. Like you can reduce your footprint by 50% by cutting where it's easier, and that should be fine. Like there's an element of being kind to yourself, particularly if you're a parent or particularly if you don't have much money. You know, you shouldn't feel like this is all on you. And it's also to them that I say, you know, use that voice as a new parent. Write to your local representative, say, you know, I'm a new parent and I feel part of the problem and I don't want to feel like that. And you have a responsibility to help me get out of this.
And it's also about, all right, so you have to use the diapers, but don't use a plastic pacifier or don't buy plastic utensils. Teach your kid how to eat with a reusable utensil.
Yeah. And, you know, if you've got lots of friends with kids as well, mm-hmm. why don't you just agree to not have plastic decorations? Get yourself one set of
reusable
decorations.
Oh, for the parties. Yeah, the children's party is a nice section.
Children's parties are plastic bombs. You know, I go to them taking home so many bags of toys that they use once and go in the trash afterwards. So, you know, making a pact with parents, going and speaking to the school and saying, let's do something fun. Why don't we try and have a plastic-free picnic? Plastic-free barbecue, because those kinds of events, they also help spread awareness. They're a very easy way to get people talking about the subject.
Instead of bringing a can to pay, or bring a can to pass for the food bank, but bring your own utensils to the party.
Yeah, completely. Get some volunteers to help with the washing up.
Does it sometimes feel kind of almost silly when you're talking about this stuff?
Yeah, because the solutions are so easy. I just think so much of this stuff we already know how to do. Like drinks fountains, they're not revolutionary. They're not even exciting. And I spend my life going around telling government to do more drinks fountains. Same with like, you know, some of the solutions are really boring. And I just don't understand why we can't get on with it. Home delivery is an example I sometimes use. Mm. Like home delivery is massively rising as a way that people receive their groceries, receive their shopping. Now, when a truck or whatever delivers your groceries to your home, it's leaving with a load of space in it. So why can't we just have reusable packaging that you would then give back all of that reusable packaging every time you take a delivery of new stuff? Simple. And you explain this to store executives and they say, oh, yeah, now I see.
And there is a way.
There is a way, and it's not that hard. It's not that hard. But I'm convinced that we won't see these innovations really take root until they set themselves these targets. And that's government and corporations. You know, they have to say, we will reduce our plastic by, I don't know what it is in the US, but say 50% by 2025. Mm-hmm. They set that kind of target, then it provides that incentive. Then the market starts to work and they really start to respond to the challenge. Otherwise, they've got this whole team of product designers and product engineers who are just working out how to do a, you know, create a whole new piece of plastic that will mm-hmm. catch someone's eye better as they walk past it in the store.
You know, I purchased those reusable produce bags and they weren't cheap, but I think there is plastic in them, but they're reusable. And it's better than that really thin plastic that you get from grocery bags and then the produce bags. I don't know if they have them in the UK or not, but super thin plastic that just literally gets thrown out as soon as you use the vegetable.
Exactly. It just gets, and so getting more reusables there, a lot of stores are moving over to paper, but I think what you've done is exactly the right thing. We should start to encourage people to be bringing their own reusable containers for this stuff. And in the UK, they introduced a 5p charge, so about 5 cents charge on each plastic bag. And plastic bag mm-hmm. use has dropped by 85%.
Wow.
It's huge. It's a huge drop, tiny little measure like that, you know. And it's not, again, it's not revolutionary. It's not even exciting, but it had a big impact. I mean, anyone who wants to come and talk to me, if anyone from government is listening or any company is listening, I am full of ideas like this.
Let's see. Kieran in Hilliard, you're on the air. Hi, Kieran.
Hi. Yeah. This may not apply so much in the UK, but here in America, we know that anytime you go to a restaurant, you're going to be given far more than you can eat, reasonably eat in one sitting. So you're going to have a carryout. So several years back, I started taking my own carry-out reusable containers and a very stylish lunch kit. Mm-hmm. And wait staff absolutely love me, but unfortunately, it just hasn't caught on yet.
That's a great idea. Like, you know, you're going to do or even if you know you're going to do carry out. I did carry out the other day, and there was a styrofoam container, and I thought, gosh, I wish I just would have brought my own stuff to have them put it in. But Will, has there been any pushback on that as far as health laws and that kind of a thing?
No, there hasn't. There hasn't. Every time. You know, every time someone says, oh, we can never do that because of health and safety, then I go and look it up and they're
wrong.
There
is nothing.
You know, there's nothing there stopping them from doing it in people's individual carryouts. I think that kind of stuff is totally fine. One of the areas where I've reduced plastic the most, it's packing my own lunch, making my own lunch on a Sunday and taking it into work in my own containers. Like, lunch and food on the go and food out is a major contributor to ocean plastics.
Oh, let's see. Tom in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for doing this topic.
You bet.
I'm a science teacher. I teach middle school science, and I've had the opportunity to go on several science expeditions to remote places, the Galapagos Islands, the Shumagin Islands off the coast of Alaska. And one huge constant, hundreds of miles from the nearest habitation, was plastic cluttering the beaches. Mm. And we were surveying flightless cormorants, and we were places where humans aren't allowed to go. And we would see nests where these cormorants have integrated the plastic into their nests. And you wonder what the long-term effect of that is going to be. And, with my students, I encourage them to act individually, avoid the use of plastic water bottles. Use, the disposable ones, and use reusable ones as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it all starts with the individual.
Start them young. Right. Tom, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
How much are kids learning about this, Will McCollum? Do you know?
More and more. Kids get this. They get this so well. It's amazing. I speak quite a lot to kids. My sister's a teacher. I have a lot of friends with kids, and they are becoming the plastic police. It's amazing. They just, they can see it. They can see that the objects that are shown on the news or shown in pictures that are in a whale's stomach are the same objects that are in their cupboards. And so it makes total sense. Just cut it out. And they don't understand why we can't do it, and why we're not doing it fast enough. So I think they're learning more and more. I think there's a lot more scope, though. And I think one of the things that I'm keen that kids get more and more stuck into is, again, like, using their voice, because there's nothing to make someone feel like they have to act than a group of kids telling them that they should.
Exactly.
And I think that there's a real role for teachers, if you're listening, get it doing some letter writing, get your kids to practice their handwriting, make it about plastic, and send those letters to a CEO or a politician. They'll really feel the pressure like nothing else.
Heather in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Heather.
I've done things like buy bigger blocks of cheese instead of the little individually wrapped cheese sticks,
right,
and switched away from tampons. But I'm curious about coffee. Those coffee bags, aside from making them into a larger bag, which I have done, it's I don't know what to do with them. And what about granola bars? Like, you're supposed to make your own or just stop buying them because they're all individually wrapped. And I'm just curious if he has any ideas about those.
Yeah, Will McCollum.
Yeah, those like smaller items, they are really tricky. And some of it is, one thing I encourage people to do, I have a worksheet in the book that you can write down your ideas. It's just dedicate a couple of hours one evening or on a Sunday afternoon to doing some research. What's in your area? Is there a kind of Whole Foods shop, or is there a market maybe where they're selling this stuff? And I think, you're on the right track with buying bigger blocks of cheese. Buying stuff in bulk is a great way to reduce plastic. So when you find somewhere that sells something plastic-free, buying a lot of it and keeping it safe in glass jars or Tupperware or whatever it is in your cupboard. So there are some ideas. Then I'm always a fan of, as I said earlier, like writing to the company. Send them an email and say, what are you doing about this plastic? Like, are you doing anything about it? I would love it. I love your product. I really want to carry on buying it. But if it's continuing to be wrapped in plastic, I'm going to find alternatives, and letting them know. Because you're right. Sometimes they're just the alternative isn't readily available to us. Not all of us have time to make all of our granola bars.
So much of our society and the way we live our life is a function of plastic, Will.
Yeah. Life on the go, would it be possible without single-use plastic? But then the next question is life on the go that good
right.
for us?
Yeah, is it all that, right?
One thing that I've talked to a couple of the big coffee chains about is, like, maybe you could just put a sign in your store that says, take a seat, coffee's nicer when you sit down. Mm. And that could be just as effective to reducing the amount of disposable coffee cups that we're using as getting reusable cups. It's just encouraging people to sit down more. That's one of the nice things with taking my lunch into work now is you just have a nicer experience of it and saves money.
Heather, thanks a lot for that call. Are there some kinds of plastics that are better than or worse than others?
Absolutely. There is a hierarchy. And, I know I talk about reducing them all, mm-hmm. but there are some plastic that it should be criminal that they're on our shelves. Things like PVC and styrofoam. Mm-hmm. There is nothing you can do with them apart from burn them or put them in landfill. And they just shouldn't be being sold anymore. So those non-recyclable, sometimes even toxic plastics should be off of our shelves as soon as possible. But then beneath that, you have you have regular plastic that we should see a huge reduction of. And then you have a lot of people talking about bioplastics. Bioplastics are interesting because they're being marketed as the green alternative when really, if something looks like plastic, if it feels like plastic, it probably behaves like plastic when it goes into the environment. So don't be fooled by bioplastics. If there really is no choice, then try and look for ones that are compostable rather than just biodegradable. Because biodegradable, they will probably still break down into microplastics anyway.
And are all of the what looks like kind of cardboard replacement disposables, are they all that they seem to be? Are they as good as they seem?
Some of them are fine. Some of them aren't. I mean, it's hard to say because there's a huge range of stuff out there. There's a lot of companies jumping on this as the alternative. What I'd say is there is no alternative material that if we were to produce 350 million tons of it in the year, wouldn't create another environmental problem. So we can't do a like-for-like replacement with plastic. There's no material. Paper, cardboard, other kinds of plastic, metal, it would just displace one problem over to another. And so being really careful that we stay focused on this idea of reducing wherever we can.
Some communities, as you mentioned, are trying to establish bans on plastic bags, or they're trying to create a situation where you have to pay a deposit or whatever you want to call it, a fee to use a plastic bag in, say, a grocery store or that kind of a thing. And in Ohio, they're trying to, at the state level, stop local governments from enacting those kinds of laws. Is that happening in the UK? Is that a familiar thing?
We're a little bit slow. we're starting to see more action and we have a different government system. So this kind of stuff tends to be more national. And we will see some of those bans coming in by 2021. But, bans are good. Bans work. They take a useless item and they stop it from being produced. But, sometimes they can end up being a bit piecemeal. Like, why have you banned this product and not that one? Because one person complained about this. And that's why I think having those targets where they say, we'll overall reduce by this amount by this date, that's what we need to see. And then they'll really take it seriously. But bans are brilliant. The Seychelles Islands in the Indian Ocean, they've just banned the import of single-use plastic because they couldn't cope. They're an island. They're a group of islands.
Right.
And they couldn't cope with the volume of plastic. So they've completely banned importing any single-use plastic.
I know Australia is very ecologically correct because it's an island as well. Are there places like that, westernized places, that are starting to address this issue?
They're none of them fast enough, and it's a real shame. I think Australia, some of the states in Australia are doing more than others. Mm-hmm. New South Wales, I know they introduced one of those deposit return schemes that we were talking about earlier. Other ones have banned plastic bags. New Zealand as well, some measures going on there. But you'd think the UK, we're a tiny island and have done nowhere near enough.
That's true. I forgot about that. Yeah,
we're just exporting our problem somewhere else in the world. We're packaging it all up and shipping it over to Southeast Asia.
Will McCallum, that's well, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're out of time. But thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Will McCallum is the author of a new book titled How to Give Up Plastic, A Guide to Changing the World, One Plastic Bottle at a Time. He's also head of oceans at Greenpeace UK. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.